You're listening to Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada.
The real key here is that the farmers themselves are empowered by their participation in the fair trade system.
This three-part documentary series explores growing international movements to create new trading systems that respect farmers and workers, and to establish ethical standards in manufacturing and resource extraction.
Fair trade has made possible for indigenous people to connect to other communities beyond these boundaries.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
And I'm Asad Ismi.
This is the second part of our series. For the next half hour, we'll be profiling the fair trade market in coffee and cocoa, two of the most important fair trade commodities. Stay tuned. The fair trade movement started 50 years ago in Africa and Europe. The fair trade labeling system started in 1989, when coffee was the first labeled product. Today, producer cooperatives and importers for some products have been certified by the Fair Trade Labeling Organization, or FLO, based in Germany. Importers who are certified fair trade give southern farmers a guaranteed minimum price for their crops that is higher than the market price and covers the cost of production. They may pay for products in advance to help farmers avoid usurious moneylenders. Furthermore, importers pay a social premium, which goes towards ensuring medical care and education for the communities they purchase from.
Fair trade involves long-term relationships which provide farmers with stability of income so they can plan for the future. With such support, farmers can organize themselves into democratically run cooperatives which share profits equally and promote community development. Fair trade also protects the environment, as most farmers who are part of it are moving to organic farming, free of pesticides and chemical fertilizers.
Today, about a million farmers in 50 developing countries benefit from the sale of fair trade certified products. Fair trade certified products are sold in Europe, Japan, and North America by small and large retailers, including supermarkets and department stores. FLO has affiliates in 17 countries, Transfair Canada being one of them, which monitor the retailers that sell fair trade products.
Linda Burnside is founder of Alternative Grounds in Toronto, Ontario's first fair trade certified coffee roaster that also runs a cafe. The 11-year-old business buys only fair trade certified coffee and supplies social justice groups, cafes, health food stores, and churches.
What I think is really good about fair trade in Canada is that Transfair Canada does actually act as a certifying body. Companies are audited every single year, right, to ensure that we're doing what it is we say we're doing, right? And that is not how it operates. For instance, in the U.S., it does not do inspections. And I think that for fair trade to have credibility for consumers, you have to have an independent third body who is doing the certifying and is actually going out and doing inspecting.
Coffee is the world's second most valuable traded commodity after oil and the main focus of fair trade efforts. The major coffee producers are Brazil, Vietnam, and Colombia. Fair trade coffee sales in Canada and the United States have increased 50 to 100% annually in recent years. Many Canadian city councils and universities support fair trade coffee, which is widely available in large cities.
Fair trade coffee's importance has been amplified by the collapse of world coffee prices between 1998 and 2001. This had catastrophic effects on 25 million coffee farmers who were driven to poverty, starvation, and destitution. In Central America alone, 600,000 jobs were lost in coffee farming. Coffee prices recovered somewhat in 2005, but are still at only the average for the 1990s. Coffee workers on large plantations, which include children, are paid very little and work under dangerous conditions with few legal rights and exposure to toxic pesticides. Unions are almost unknown. Coffee generates $75 billion in sales every year, but 55% of this goes to only four multinational corporations: Nestlé, Philip Morris, Sara Lee, and Procter & Gamble. These companies, along with large retailers such as Loblaws, Tim Hortons, and Second Cup, take 86% of the money spent on coffee. Producer countries get only 8%.
Rufino Herrera is president of Fedecares, a fair trade coffee cooperative in the Dominican Republic. He's a founder of the fair trade labeling movement. He explains the benefits of fair trade for producers.
We benefit because we sell to consumers directly. This includes roasters and distributors of coffee. This setup is the opposite of what used to happen in the past, when we had to rely on a middle person. With fair trade, we are guaranteed a minimum price of $1.26 US per pound of non-organic coffee and $1.41 US for organic. This is not the case in the conventional market, where there are unpredictable fluctuations with many highs and lows. At times, the fair trade price has doubled the global market price. This, in turn, has allowed us to invest in initiatives that aim to improve education and health services in our communities, thus making it possible to send our children to school and improve housing conditions. In sum, the fair trade price permits us to break out from the poverty and marginalization in which small-scale farming and peasant communities exist.
Siquel and Susie Alvarez toured fair trade cooperatives in Guatemala in early 2006. She met Don Julio Tambriz Walshach, president of the Nahuala Cooperative of Small Coffee Producers.
The
advantage of fair trade is that now we are exporting directly to the consumer. There is no middleman involved. With our very eyes, we see the coffee leave our community and the payment arrive directly to our own hands. This is of great help to us.
Don Domingo Mendoza Bizarro is president of the La Voz Coffee Cooperative in Guatemala.
The government in Guatemala often fails to deliver assistance and support to the small, poor, and rural communities. Often in our community, the school submits a proposal for funding to the co-op to cover the cost of teaching materials, supplies, or furniture. Our board reviews the request and is in charge of granting the support. This is how our co-op becomes an agent of social change in the community. We are committed to improving the health of our members. At the moment, we have contracted the part-time services of a doctor who looks after emergency cases. Our hope is to secure the permanent services of one or two doctors who can reside in our community and provide a more reliable and ongoing service to the members and their families.
Fair trade also benefits the environment, as producers must practice environmental protection to be certified. Mayavenik is a coffee cooperative in Chiapas, Mexico. It is part of the indigenous social community organization known as Las Abejas, which has 5,000 members. Mayavenik exports to Canada, the US, Sweden, and Japan. The cooperative's president, Macario Arias, spoke with CKLN in Toronto.
We are conscious that Mother Earth is the mother of everything, including us all. As babies, we breastfeed from our mothers. When we grow up and can no longer drink their milk, we consume what we harvest from the land. And that's why we call ourselves children of Mother Earth.
In the Dominican Republic, Fedecares practices organic methods.
Most of the crops that are sold in the fair trade market are certified organic. For example, here in the Dominican Republic, as well as in other countries in Latin America, we have bananas, cocoa, etc. In our case, the coffee that we harvest is all shade grown and pesticide free. As a result, we are able to receive a higher price while contributing to the better health of our consumers, as well as protecting the environment.
Don Manuel Quema Achalam is secretary of the board of the Nahuala Cooperative.
Acá, digamos, en toda la región, la gente no utiliza químico.
Around here, people are not used to using chemicals in their production. We are not like the large state farms, which are more inclined to use pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides in their treatment of coffee. Instead, we practice organic farming.
For Linda Burnside, founder of the fair trade roaster Alternative Grounds, fair trade is about equity.
It's based on a more equitable relationship between producers and consumers, and it's based on a fair price, maintaining relationships over time, and in the relationship part, being able to listen and hear people and being in a position of dialogue with people when things change for them, when things change for you.
Alternative Grounds is part of a North American cooperative of fair trade roasters known as Cooperative Coffees.
There are about 18 members of us now. They're generally small to medium-sized roasters who are totally keen about coffee, yes, but also passionate about justice. And having a community of us allows us to buy direct from farmers, which is one of the primary tenets of fair trade.
Linda is concerned about the involvement of large corporations in fair trade, a recent development.
Right now you have a McDonald's in the States that's rolling out fair trade coffee in 650 of their stores. You have Nestle's that just came on board. You have Marks and Spencer's in the UK. It's a very complex, fascinating issue. People say, well, you know, if a higher volume of coffee is being sold on the fair trade market, that's good for the farmers. Because right now, I mean, most farmers sell like 1%, up to 10% or something of their crop on the fair trade market, and the rest is bought at the regular seed price. So, I mean, there is an argument to be made for that. I think that there are also other arguments that would make us a bit concerned about what is happening and why it's happening and who ultimately will benefit. Who is fair trade supposed to be about, right? Initially, the movement was to support small farmers, right? And I think increasingly it can come to be about large corporations and their corporate image, and it can be pushing fair trade into the sort of niche market category. And isn't that a, you know, comment on society when justice becomes a niche market?
For decades, fair trade coffee has been part of the largest struggle for social justice. Jan Braunholz has been a member of Cafe Campaign and of the German Solidarity Movement with Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Mexico for the last 20 years. Cafe Campaign began buying fair trade coffee from these countries as a way of showing solidarity with the Sandinistas, the FMLN, and later the Zapatistas.
In 83, there were many contra actions against Nicaragua, and there was the idea worldwide to help or to protect the Nicaraguan Revolution. One idea was to get this coffee to Europe and also to the U.S. to help the campesinos to get a better price, a more fair price for their product. We began with a small project, and it rises up very quickly.
For the Las Abejas indigenous group in Chiapas, fair trade coffee has been the outcome of the struggle to rebuild their pacifist community after 45 of its members were massacred by a government death squad in December 1997. Jose Perez Vasquez is president of the Las Abejas organization.
This is el fruto de la lucha indígena. Ese es el fruto de la sangre derramada de nuestros hermanos.
And that is the fruit of the indigenous struggle and the outcome from the massacre and the blood spilled by our brothers and sisters. Kakua.
You're listening to Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada, a documentary series. Stay tuned for the second half of this program, where we move from coffee to cocoa. Cocoa is used to make chocolate and also in the beverage industry. Close to half of the world's cocoa beans are produced in the Ivory Coast, and another one-fifth in Ghana. Other important producers are Indonesia, Brazil, and Cameroon.
As with coffee, the price of cocoa collapsed in 2000, driving farmers into destitution. This, along with Western corporate pressure, has encouraged widespread child slavery in Ivory Coast and Ghana. Owners of Ivory Coast's large cocoa plantations use children to clear land for the planting of cocoa trees and for weeding and harvesting crops. The boys and girls who are as young as 7 years are unpaid or paid very little. According to a documentary produced by Channel 4 in England, 90% of the cocoa farms in Ivory Coast use child slave labor, which harvests most of the cocoa imported into England from there. Working conditions for the children have been described as akin to hell. They include 20-hour workdays, 7 days a week, malnutrition, the threat of physical, psychological, and sexual abuse, as well as poisoning by chemicals.
As with coffee, five large multinationals, Nestle, Mars, Cadbury, Hershey, and Kraft, dominate the chocolate market and take most of the profits. These companies collude to fix the price of cocoa at such a low level that farmers cannot afford to pay a fair price for labor. The U.S. and Britain are the two leading chocolate-consuming countries. Mars and Hershey control three-quarters of U.S. chocolate sales, and Cadbury, Nestle, and Mars account for the same percentage of sales in Britain.
Bama Athreya is director of International Labor Rights Fund, ILRF, a non-profit advocacy organization that defends labor rights around the world. She is also on the board of Global Exchange, a U.S. NGO focused on promoting social justice internationally. ILRF has sent labor investigators to the Ivory Coast several times, most recently in December 2005.
The media started to report the problem of forced child labor in cocoa production in 2001, but it clearly is a problem that has a much greater historical depth than just that. In fact, it's a problem that goes back 100 years. I mean, there was a big expose of Cadbury Corporation, the British-based chocolate company, around 1905, just about 100 years ago, for use of slave labor in its cocoa production. And here it is 100 years later, and we're still looking at trafficked labor, forced labor, and essentially slave labor in cocoa production in West Africa. Some of the worst stories that we heard were of boys that were tricked, lured with false promises of lucrative employment, that once they actually arrived at the plantations in Ivory Coast were held in captivity, were not allowed to escape, were forced to work, were not paid, and were threatened with very, very severe punishment if they did try to escape and return to their homes. I think one of the testimonies was a child that was threatened to be buried alive if he failed to complete the work or tried to escape. The only reason we were able to talk to these particular youths at all is because they did manage to escape and return to Mali, which is where they were from.
The ILRF's investigation shows that slavery is fostered by the multinational corporations and that cocoa farmers are not the main culprits.
In Ivory Coast, the companies love to tell you that, it's very dispersed, there are 500,000 farms, and that's all true, there are 500,000 small farms, but frankly, they all go through the exact same hands in order to get out of Ivory Coast and to Europe or the United States. There are 10 multinational corporations that have offices in Ivory Coast that control just about all of the cocoa export from that country. And of those 10, there are 3 corporations that control well over half the cocoa export. And those companies are Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, and Nestle. And so, at the end of the day, that's where the control over prices comes in. The way the picture looks in Ivory Coast is this: you've got this small handful of ultimate buyers and exporters who sit in the country's capital, and have at the end of the day the control over the cocoa trade. Those companies have at their disposal a small army of middlemen, and the middlemen will go out to the farm, And the farms are in Ivory Coast, you know, mostly small farms. You don't see very many very big plantations. So they're small farms. And the middlemen will buy the beans from the cocoa farmer and, you know, be responsible for transporting them, getting them back to the company. One of the things that we found, particularly on this recent trip in December of 2005, is that the official price that the companies are, you know, saying that they're paying is not what the farmers are getting by a long shot. The official price as of the end of last year was 800 Ivoirian francs per kilo. And in some cases, we found the farmers were getting prices that were as low as 200 francs per kilo. So, you know, a lot's getting sort of mopped up in the middle. What that means is that the farmers are producing at virtually cost. I mean, they're hardly getting anything. They were very, very beleaguered, having a hard time feeding their families. And this, you know, is an indication of why they need the cheapest possible labor they can get. And they can't afford to pay decent wages. So they use whatever labor they can get. Under whatever conditions. So we're not by any means, you know, blaming the farmers. The farmers are not the problem.
Within Ivory Coast, farmers are organizing themselves to improve conditions for children. Fair trade certification is an important tool in this. Global Exchange works with the first fair trade cooperative to be certified in Ivory Coast, Cabo Kiva.
The farmers in Cabo Kiva, the fair trade cooperative, now have a premium that they're getting because they're able to, you know, to get the fair trade price for the cocoa. They're using their premium to build schools for the kids in the region. So, you know, the farmers aren't the problem. The farmers have the money to do the right thing. They will do the right thing.
In neighboring Ghana, the Kuapa Koku Cooperative is well established with more than 45,000 members in 1,200 village societies. The co-op is also part owner of the Day Chocolate Company in the UK, which in 1998 began manufacturing a fair trade chocolate bar, Divine Chocolate, to compete with major brands. Divine Chocolate bars are available in Canada. Kuapa Koku's director, Nicholas Agi Guyan, explains the benefits of fair trade.
Now, we were concentrating on giving the children of the farmers a very good education. And so we are building this school to enable the farmers keep their children there and then have enough time to work. It is also an idea of doing away with the child labor thing. You know, because if the children are allowed to go to farm, then it is likely that they will also be engaged in one way or the other. So we keep these children at the community and then let the parents go and work and come, take their children back home, and then have time to also do other things that can support the children or the family. On the health ground, we have also commissioned a project like the mobile clinic. We have some doctors. They are committed, dedicated, and have also decided to render their services to the family. So we give, or the co-op give the money to the doctor to go and buy the medicine, and then pay them some allowances, and then dispatch them to the community, the village level, especially where they are far away from the health facilities.
Democratic decision-making is an important tenet of fair trade that Kuapa Koku promotes.
Politically, what we are also doing is to empower them so that they can take up responsible positions within the political arena. We allow them to elect their officers, and they go through this democratic process. From the grassroots, we move up. People move from the societies to take higher responsibility. So the farmers are politically empowered, and it is not only within the co-op. But now some of the farmers that we have trained, especially women, are trying to take responsible positions within their districts and then the national level. And through that, they have become self-confident, self-sufficient, and then are very dependable.
Nicholas holds the multinational companies responsible for the low price of cocoa.
So we are producers, and sometimes when you are producing the raw materials, you are just at the disadvantage point. When they decide, when the world, the manufacturers decide, on how or what they are going to give to the farmers, We are just at the receiving end.
In Europe, fair trade chocolate is available in supermarkets, convenience stores, gas stations, and movie theaters. In Canada, it can be found in large cities and supermarkets and health food stores. The main importer of fair trade chocolate in Canada is the La Siembra Cooperative, formed in 1989 and based in Ottawa. La Siembra's Coco Camino product line is sold throughout Canada and is expanding distribution in the United States. La Siembra imports from cooperatives in the Dominican Republic and Paraguay and gives farmers higher than world market prices. This includes the payment of organic and social premiums that are used for development programs. One of La Siembra's founding principles is that, quote, workers in the North and South deserve meaningful employment, fair wages and working conditions, and a say in their future. Jeff DeJong is co-owner of La Siembra.
We've been on a very steep growth curve, and our first year of business, our revenues were $40,000, and this year we're looking at $4 million. The growth rates of fair trade in Canada over the last 4 years have been 55% on an annual basis. La Siembra's beginnings for our Coco Camino products were in the natural health food sector, and that's really still the core of our business, and that's from, you know, coast to coast. But there's been a growing trend within grocery markets, both in Canada and the United States, to support fair trade products and open up their shelves to high-quality fair trade organic chocolate. And so that's been probably our highest growth sector.
Jeff explains the main purpose of La Siembra.
The real mission of our cooperative is to encourage people to think about where their food comes from and to think about the conditions upon which people are growing the food that we eat. And if we can, you know, play a role in providing people with an opportunity to connect to the world of cocoa and to the world of sugar, you know, that once people connect with that reality, there's a high degree of, you know, chance that people will make those adjustments, you know, in their purchasing habits. So,
you've been listening to Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada. This half-hour program was the second in a three-part series. Our next program explores movements for ethical standards in manufacturing of clothing and in mining.
You can hear all three parts online. Go to www.ckln.fm and look for the link, or email news@ckln.fm for more information. I'm Asad Ismi, writer, researcher, and executive producer.
I'm Kristen Schwartz, producer.
Additional interviews for this part by Susie Alvarez, Giselle Yanez, and Ron Anisich. Translation by Susie Alvarez and Leonardo Carranza.
Thanks especially to Susie Alvarez for the concept of this series, to Mark Balkowski for production assistance, and to CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto. Our theme music for this series is El Mercado Equitativo by Reina Isabel Torres. It is performed by the group Recopiladores de la Pante, who are part of a cooperative of small coffee producers in Nicaragua.
During the break, we heard Dobe Nahore from Ivory Coast. The track is called Cacao.
This series was funded by the Canadian Union of Public Employees,
Canadian Auto Workers,
Canadian Labour Congress,
Canadian Union of Postal Workers,
Canadian Federation of Students,
Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation,
Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association,
Ontario Public Interest Research Group, University of Toronto,
Mining Watch Canada,
and Transfer Canada.
Thanks for listening.